Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema, on Noon Forum. We'll hear a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2008 documentary film The Battle for White Clay, directed by Lincoln, Nebraska filmmaker Mark Vezina. The film depicts the efforts of American Indian activist Frank LaMare in his quest to bring down what he sees as profiteers of American Indian misery in White Clay, Nebraska, bordering South Dakota's Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. According to the documentary, he has caught liquor store owners in White Clay in the act of unlawfully selling alcohol to minors and to intoxicated Indian people, and illegally allowing them to drink on store premises. The members of the panel are Mark Vezina, the director of the film, and Frank LaMare, the protagonist in the documentary. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Saturday afternoon, March 28, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to begin the program is the director of the Battle for White Clay, Mark Vezina.
I'd like to start with any comments or questions. Yes.
I think the issue is more widespread than just what's going on in White Clay, because I think that if you look at inner city Omaha, you'll see a lot of the types of things that are happening. You'll see the grocery stores, the quick shops, the et cetera, with the malt liquor cans, and it acts as a trigger for a lot of people that are for alcoholics, and I think that's one of the reasons why it was so opposed by the grocery and associations. And it seemed to me that part of the problem is with alcoholism and stuff like that. When people get off of it, they need things to do to keep themselves busy. And the fact that there is so much unemployment on the res, the fact that, you know, are the demand sites like the treatment centers, et cetera, that's not there, I'm assuming. Is it? And is that true?
It is going to be hard to deal with many of the social ills that beset the Oglala people right now. Very important that you bring that out. It is. It would be a long road that we would have to take to try to make things better there. I think that our involvement in White Clay dealing with the issues of illegality that surround the sale of alcohol onto Pine Ridge is the first small step. And it's always important in gatherings like this that I mention, sometimes we talk about that, we talk about that end goal, and perhaps we'll never get there. And perhaps we'll never be able to understand it. And the reason I say that is if we cannot understand very basics at White Clay about respect and understanding for our neighbors and the welfare of our neighbors, if we cannot understand those clearly black and white things, how are we going to understand the more complex about social ills, poverty, you know, opportunity, but we have to get off the mark. And when we have these discussions, it always doesn't trouble me, but it's a reality that whenever we're gathered like this, people always say, well, if, when that word comes up, it scares me, because we have a tendency at White Clay to beg the question. We beg the question. We never take one step, and that's what we're just asking, and we've been asking for a long time, is just to take that first step to begin to deal with the complex issues at White Clay, Nebraska, to really not dramatize them, but a reality. And I remind us of this from time to time in those arrests that you've seen in 1999. In July the 3rd of 1999, Russell was arrested. I was arrested with him. A number of us were arrested. I remember going back into Pine Ridge that day to Billy Mills Hall, and it was packed with hundreds and hundreds of angry marchers. The march was over. Our release was negotiated by Dennis Banks. We went back in to Billy Mills Hall. There was a huge gathering of supporters, and perhaps the most poignant, powerful thing, statement ever made regarding white clay was made that day by Russell Means. He explained everything. And in that hall, and there was 400 or 500 people, he said, look at you. Do you know who you are? You are crazy horses people. That's who you as the Oglalas are. You are crazy horses people. You come from the people who took the greatest army that this country could put into the field, and you defeated them to the last man. And now look at you. You're on your knees. And they didn't have to fire one shot. And that's what they did with alcohol. That's what was done with drugs. It is so complex, but yet it is so simple. I believe that generations ago, people gathered and said, how are we going to control those at Pine Ridge? And somebody brought up the idea that alcohol helps to control people. It was introduced. It was prevalent there. It took generations, a generation, to instill that and to gain that control. It's going to take generations for the Oglalas to wrest the control, you know, back. It's a very, very complex and historical issue, but we don't get anywhere because we never take that first step. There's clear illegalities at White Clay. And people every now and then will talk to Mark or say something to Frank about, you know, alcohol. If people want to drink themselves silly, whether they're Oglalas or Nebraskans, they're going to do it. I'm not smart enough to tell you, and I'm not going to be judgmental. This never did start out having to do with the issue of alcohol. It had to do with doing legal things, and that it addressed illegalities that led to devastation and murder and violence. That's where this effort started. But it's hard to deal with that. Let's talk about alcoholism, and let's shift this discussion back to the people of Pine Ridge. And I generalize, but that's what we're dealing with. It took us a long time to get there. It's going to take us a long time to find a way out of here. But let's take one little step. We can't talk about this grand design when we can't even issue a citation. And that's kind of where we're at. I took too long. Thank you for the question.
My name's Larry. My understanding is that the new drug of choice is going to be meth that's coming in from Mexico, and that within 5 years it will overtake the beer sales on White Clay, and it's delivered right into the reservation. They don't even have to leave their homes. It's delivered to their homes and everything. Could I get some comment on that? Thank you.
Meth is certainly a growing problem on Pine Ridge and across the country. It started in the western part of the country and worked its way east. I think it's everywhere in the United States now. I haven't seen any statistics anywhere that would suggest that meth addiction, as terrible it is and as it is, and it's worse certainly than alcohol addiction because it kills quicker. But I haven't seen any statistics that show that meth has any kind of the reach in any segment of our society that alcohol has. I mean, the disease, the economic damage of alcohol and alcohol abuse far exceeds the illness and economic damage of all the other illegal drugs combined in this country. I would imagine that's probably the same on Pine Ridge. Certainly, cocaine and crack, when those were the major inner city type of drugs of choice, after alcohol, always, those had their place on Pine Ridge and still do, I believe, but meth certainly has overtaken it. The fact that in the United States, most of the United States, except for a few Indian reservations, alcohol is legal, I think, confuses a lot of people about the significance of alcohol abuse. It really is the leading cause of all sorts of illnesses in America and on Pine Ridge. When you look at meth, the spread of meth and crack and alcohol bootlegging, which exists on Pine Ridge as well, of course it's linked directly to the disadvantaged economic situation there. For the same reasons that lead inner city youth and to form gangs and distribute illegal drugs and all of that, are the same reasons that lead young people and older people on Pine Ridge to do the same sort of thing. So it does spread that way. But it would be a mistake to think that alcohol is not far and away the number one drug abused on Pine Ridge. The Oglala Sioux Tribal Council issued a report, too, maybe about 3 years ago now, in which they reported that 8 out of 10 families on Pine Ridge are adversely impacted directly by alcohol abuse. It's a rule of thumb when you talk to people on Pine Ridge that 4 out of 5 adults are suffering from alcoholism or serious alcohol abuse problems. Meth is not as bad as it has grown on the reservation. It hasn't reached anywhere near those staggering proportions.
If I may, what's going on now? I understand that a member of the Liquor Commission was just up there. Bruning had just gone back up there as well. And what's going to happen next?
It was last month. in February, at a showing of the Battle for White Clay at the Ross, Mary Riepke Ross Theater in Lincoln, we had a panel discussion, Frank and I and several others. We invited the Attorney General, John Bruning, to come, as well as some other officials, but John Bruning was the one that came. And he made some pledges to the audience. I mean, he took the brunt, sort of the official brunt of some anger in the audience for inaction. Certainly, he's been an elected official, one of a handful of elected officials that have done something, anything on White Clay. He committed to take some senators to White Clay. Last month, we took the chairman of the General Affairs Committee, Russ Karpisek, and Colby Koash, Senator Koash from Lincoln, also on the General Affairs Committee, along with the newest Liquor Control Commissioner, Bob Batt from Omaha. And we spent 2 hours on the streets of White Clay, went into every one of the stores, talked to people on the streets. It was an eye-opening experience, I think, for everybody. Some of them had been prepared. I mean, certainly the Attorney General and his staff, Senator Koash, had been up to White Clay as a youth and was well aware of what goes on up there. But seeing it and talking to people is important. On the way back from White Clay, Senator Karpisek, who I said as the chair of the General Affairs Committee, announced to us and to a reporter from the World Herald that he was going to propose a legislative interim study on White Clay. The idea behind that is to have the General Affairs Committee hold hearings, hear about the issue, hear about proposed solutions, and if a study is done well and responsibly, there's a report that's issued with an eye towards some sorts of proposals for the legislature. So we're very optimistic that we can have a good, real hearing by the legislature. It would happen probably this coming fall or early winter, with the idea that we would get a report from that and some proposals for legislative change. Legislative change is the hard part. There are lots of senators. Lots of people recognize that there's a problem in White Clay. Something's very wrong. But when you go to try and fix it in the legislature, you're up against some powerful forces that whether they're concerned about keeping white clay the way it is, as many of the local residents are, and you heard them speak about that in the film. It's clear that the liquor industry and the retail business lobbies are very scared of taking any kind of legislative steps, any kind of changes to our liquor law or our licensing procedures that would address white clay, but could perhaps also affect their ability to grow their liquor businesses throughout the state, as a gentleman up here in the front row mentioned. That is a major stumbling block with our elected officials. I'm real optimistic, though. I'm real hopeful that something good can come out of this, because I think for the first time, this isn't the first time that senators have made a trip to White Clay. This is, I think, though, the first time that they saw what really goes on there. We were there for 2 hours. When we arrived, the county sheriff and deputies for Sheridan County were in the process of sweeping the streets, getting people off the streets so that there wouldn't be the 40 people that were reportedly standing on the streets drinking before we arrived, and that was at 11 o'clock on a Friday. But because we were there for 2 hours, these people started to drift out from behind the buildings where they were shooed by the county sheriff. And I think our senators and our liquor commissioner saw the kind of response to the white clay situation that comes out of local law enforcement there. You know, the county sheriff would prefer to sweep this under the streets, under the rug, wherever he can sweep it. I know at one point Attorney General Bruning led some of the party that was there, White Clay, back behind the buildings to take a look at the people that were sort of being asked or forced to stand behind there at the request of the county sheriff's deputies. Will something really good come out of this? It's yet to be seen, but this is a really important, important event. And, you know, we have to thank the Attorney General for taking some initiative with us on this.
My name is Valerie Kilscrow Copeland, and I am Ogallala Sioux. I grew up basically as a urban Indian, but I wanted to thank all those who are involved in this film for making this film, because I think that it's something that not only the Native American community, but all the communities, non-Native as well, need to be aware of this issue. I work with the Native American youth, and, you know, I'm forever struggling and fighting, you know, trying to get it through into their head about the dangers of alcoholism. And I like to tell them the story of my grandmother, and it's she's from Pine Ridge, lived in Pine Ridge, as well as my father, Lester Kilscrow. She had went shopping one day, and she caught a ride to the grocery store and got a ride back, and the people who she caught a ride from were white people, and they dropped her off at White Clay because they didn't want to drive into the reservation, because back when my grandmother lived there, it was very, very violent. Well, she had a bag of groceries with her walking through White Clay, and she was jumped by a couple of drunks, and they beat her on the side of the head with a tire iron. And they beat her so hard that her eyeball came out of her socket and hung down her face in a bloody mess, and she had passed out. And they robbed her of all her money and all the food that she went to get at the grocery store. And then she was in the hospital, and she never fully recovered from that incident. She always had to have a glass eye. She had problems, you know, from there on out from that incident. But even back then, had somebody done something about White Clay or tried to stop it, you know, that would have never happened to her. And there are more people who did pass away in White Clay that aren't talked about, because when I talked to my grandmother, she had told me a story of when she was in the hospital, and it was at a different time, not at the same time she was in the hospital because of her eye. But she said they had brought a woman in to the hospital, and she was froze solid. And she was, they told her that she had been leaning against a building there in White Clay. And in her hand, she actually had, I guess they had bottles back then. They could have beer bottles. But she had a beer bottle frozen in her hand, about ready to drink the bottle. And she froze that way, leaning against the building. And they wheeled her into the hospital, where she, of course, was dead. But I know that in the film they said there were two people who died in White Clay, but I know there are a lot more that haven't been reported. And, you know, it really needs to be an issue. I mean, people are saying, well, if they close White Clay, they'll go to Martin, they'll go to Rushville, this place that way. But it's a step. And it's a step in the right direction to show our Native American youth that this is important, you know. Maybe they will go to Rushville, but there are a lot of people on the reservation who don't have cars, and maybe some of them won't go to Rushville. Maybe one of them won't go to Rushville. Maybe one of them will quit drinking, and so that makes it worth it. And I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for making this film. I know, you know, what struggles it is. I've seen what you went through. You were arrested, but it's very important to get this message out to our youth, to let them know what's going on.
Thank you. You know, I want to thank you. You know, I want to thank you for that. You know, there are scores and hundreds and probably thousands now of our relatives who have died in and around White Clay and Pine Ridge because of alcohol that came from us. It is really hard to understand, you know, the impact unless you have somebody who talks about these things firsthand. And perhaps we need to be doing, you know, more of that. In 1998, the first time that I became involved there, I went there one day because they were memorializing the life of a veteran up there by the name of Little John Means, who was found beaten to death in the wintertime, springtime, on the streets of White Clay. They never investigated that homicide and said that he was very, very drunk, and that accounted for, you know, the tremendous trauma that he had to the back of his head, that he must have been drinking, he must have staggered, he must have hit his head violently. Never any mention made of the fact that his billfold was 15 feet from his body, empty. That must have done that on their own. At White Clay and in Nebraska, we're famous for explaining away and begging questions that are raised by Native people and non-Native people. I think it is time that we really understand that and take steps, even individually, to do what we can to speak out. We call ourselves, and I don't know if I came across that road into Nebraska today, but you come across and you have this big sign about the good life that we have here. And politicians talk about the good life, and they talk about this Nebraska way of doing things, this pragmatism, this tradition we have. It rings hollow to me, and I'm a good Nebraskan as any. It rings hollow to me because I've seen what happens at White Clay. I see what continues to happen there. You know, Mark mentioned, and he knows my strong feelings, and he's very encouraged about those things that perhaps can happen legislatively. I reserve my judgment. I'm not very encouraged. I'm discouraged. And 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said this. Maybe I should have. I don't know if we have legislators, the kind of legislators we need in Omaha beyond, who have any heart, have any nerve. And I think they're impacted by other interests having to do with money. And that's a grim reality that I have come to know firsthand. This, to me, is a no-brainer, and I consider myself an objective person. It something needs to be done for our Nebraska citizens, for our relatives at Pine Ridge, and even the legislators beg the question. And I'm going to share this because I've after 10 years, I begin to share these kind of things. You know, somebody said, Frank, I really appreciate your courageous stance. No courageous stance. If I had a courageous stance, I would have done what crossed my mind in 1999 and took a sledgehammer and went up and knocked down the doors. I'd have been out of prison by now. But perhaps things would have changed more quickly. Perhaps lives would have been saved. But, you know, I invested in our legislature because I'm a political kind of a guy. I took the time to try to understand, to educate, and to share some insights with those who work in the public trust to make things better, but I see no heart. You know, I see no commitment. I see no nerve. I see us sitting I see them sitting on their hands. And you know the kind of reaction that we would get with regard to white clay is when somebody says they heard that Frank Lemire told the Democrats and the Republicans to quit sitting on your hands. Oh, there'll be a good outcry about that. But nothing, no outcry for those things that continue to happen at white clay. I'm very much discouraged in the process. Because nobody has the heart, nobody has the courage. I'm waiting, you know, for somebody to take the lead, and we don't see it happening. We are the miner's canary. It does happen other places. We ignore it, and then we wonder why things happen in our own communities. Alcohol is prevalent. It's okay. And I don't know. We're waiting for people to work to make those changes, and perhaps we'll see them. But I'm just waiting for those legislators to take heart. And to do what needs to be done. It is it's white clay. This summer, on the 10th anniversary of the murders of Hard Heart and Black Elk in 99, those two unsolved, in commemoration of the 10th of the marches that took place in 99, the arrests on July 3rd of 1999, I think white clay continues to be a tinderbox. I always am real careful to share this. Nobody should ever be hurt at white clay. I don't care who it is. Whether you're working for change, no matter what you're doing, native or non-native, nobody should ever be hurt at white clay in dealing with this discussion and this debate. But white clay is like a tinderbox. It's like a time bomb waiting to go off. Somebody hurt tonight, a man or a woman, somebody loses their life, there's anger, there's frustration, and when that anger and frustration manifests itself, they're not going to come to the governor and say, Governor, what do you think? Not going to listen to Frank, not going to listen to Mark, not going to listen to Russell Means, not going to listen to anybody. They have put their trust in Nebraska to try to deal with the issue. We have failed Pine Ridge miserably. They're frustrated. They're angry. And when that frustration manifests itself this year, next year, the year after that, somebody gets hurt. Nobody to blame, I don't think, except those in the public trust who could have changed it. That's how bad it is. And I just warn us, one of these days, nothing's going to help. We have a chance to talk. We have a chance to sit across the table. One of these days, we're not going to have that opportunity. People die there. It's a violent place, very violent place. I do not go there by myself. I do not go there at night. When I leave from Pine Ridge, when I'm there to Rushville, I make sure that somebody knows when I'm leaving and that I've arrived. And that's the way that it is. I would not encourage any of you, no matter who you are, native or non-native, to be there. It's a violent place, but it exists, and we've got to do something.
Yes, my name is Taylor Keene. I'm a member of the faculty at Creighton University, and I'm also a member of the Omaha Nation. And I, too, wanted to commend you both on the courage and the perseverance to follow this issue for such a long time. My question is simple. What can we do as individuals or universities or members of the community? After following this documentary, I mean, all the questions have gone through logical minds of can we stop it, can we educate, can we try to heal, as we're trying to garner our support for this cause at Creighton. I'm left speechless with, you know, what way to go. So, again, my question is how can we help?
Well, to begin with, I don't have to reiterate what Frank has talked about in terms of our elected officials being very slow to warm to tackling this issue. I've been at the legislature for several years taking proposals for legislation. I could list a dozen ideas that have come up. Some of them you've heard in the film. Others are twists on things you've seen in the film. I can find half a dozen to a dozen senators who will co-sponsor a bill, but I can't find senators to introduce it. There's a political calculation, I believe, that every politician makes when considering whether they're going to do something. The only way we can change that calculation effectively is to educate our leaders and to let them hear from the people. I mean, we all know that our leaders, our elected leaders, will make terrible mistakes if all of their constituents or a large chunk of their constituents think that they should do something. They seem to be willing to do that, even if that's a really stupid thing to do. So the idea, of course, is to educate them about what the sensible things and the right and proper and moral things to do, ethical things to do. So we need to encourage people to contact their state senators and contact the governor. The single most powerful person in the state who could do the most for this in the shortest period of time is the governor of the state of Nebraska. The governor hires and fires the head of the Nebraska State Patrol. If the governor tells the Nebraska State Patrol, you've got to do investigative work to uncover the violations by these stores in White Clay, the State Patrol would put the resources into that. The governor appoints every member of the Liquor Control Commission. So, of course, he appoints people who presumably are going to be, and I believe, are using their own judgment and their own point of view. But the governor appoints people to carry out his mission by appointing people who share the same priorities. If the governor makes it a priority to treat everyone in this state equally under the law and to pursue abuses of a particular segment of our population or a particular group in White Clay, the Liquor Commission would be seated with people who have that point of view. I really believe that. So we need to be writing letters, sending emails, making phone calls to your state senator, to the governor, telling them do something about it. Now, what exactly should they be doing is real simple and real complex at the same time. One of my goals in making this film the way I made it was to show the bureaucratic nightmare that exists when someone has the good idea, the good intention to do something about White Clay. Well, we've asked the State Patrol to tell us whether there's adequate law enforcement. They won't tell us. The Liquor Commission says, in response to a senator's question, can't you go with existing law right now and go up and close it down, and they say, no, the courts will fight us on this, or, you know, it goes around and around in circles. I don't know how many times you see elected officials in Sheridan County say that, well, we can't make a decision today. We've just learned about this today, as if they didn't know white clay was existing in their county for 100 years. Everyone makes excuses at these levels, and we really have to urge them to look at the law, look at the law violations in white clay. There isn't a really good reason why these stores should be allowed to sell alcohol because of the nature of the situation there. But these liquor stores, are the owners of these liquor stores are violating every law that we know of that's that applies to the sale of alcohol. One of my about my single major regret about this film is that I was not able to get a situation where people spoke on camera about the kinds of prostitution that occurs in white clay, the kinds of in other words, the exchanging of sexual favors of any kind you can imagine, literally, in exchange for cases of beer from these liquor store owners. I've spoken with young women who have participated in this and have become ashamed and want to speak out. I've spoken to other young women who have witnessed these situations with their friends or relatives and are shocked. I predict that sometime in the next year we'll have some more information about this in some sort of public scenario. But you can imagine how difficult it is for children or for young people to talk about something as shameful as this. But I just want to say something about the things that go on there. I mean, I don't know if you know what EBT cards are. They are the electronic debit cards by which Nebraska and South Dakota issue food stamps. It's very common for people from South Dakota, from Pine Ridge, to come to White Clay and turn over their food stamps to the beer merchants in exchange for beer. I've spoken with someone whose uncle takes his SSI disability check every month down to a White Clay beer store, deposits it with these beer store owners, and uses that as a draw to take beer out for the next several weeks. It assures that his craving for alcohol is going to be satisfied first. These are all state and federal violations of law. If any one of these merchants were convicted on one of these, they would lose their license and could never have one. Law enforcement needs to have the courage and the encouragement to undertake these kinds of investigations. They're easy for me. We've heard about these things ever since we've been up to White Clay. Why there has been no state or federal investigation of this by our law enforcement agencies is a puzzle. I don't know what time it is because I don't have a watch. Okay, Frank wants to talk, then I want to introduce.
You ask what can be done. And, I'm going to say very simply, very generally, you take the first step. And then I'll challenge you, all of you. You know, I think it was Martin Luther King, but many of our leaders historically mention that great truth that stands before you. And I think that in our working and our efforts at White Clay, I've come to know that great truth. It's a reality, the death and destruction, the devastation. It's not philosophical, it's very real. It's the truth. And people need to begin to act on it, on that great truth. And the only other thing that I would say, and I say this many ways, you need to take the first step. I don't know what that is. You do. And you know what that is. And I've taken many steps over the years, but I remember you know, the step that we, I make reference to sometime, and it was asked by an elder white man a year or two after the arrest in 99. He started talking about that. He said, "Do you remember that day when you arrested?" I said, "Yes, I do. Very hot, very, very hot. Can you remember when you went to that line?" I said, "Yes, I do." Can you remember all those things? And I didn't understand where he was coming from. And I said, "Yes, I remember it like yesterday." And then he asked a question. He said, "Have you ever thought about what would happen had you not taken that step from here to here when I was arrested? Have you ever thought about what would have happened if you'd have taken that step from here to here?" Could not and still cannot to this day find it. I cannot answer that question because I know the truth about that question. That somebody who had all this feeling, all this discussion, all these words about how things were and how they should be at White Clay when put to the test on July 3rd, 1999, at the border, if I would have not had the nerve to take that step from here to here, I know what would have happened. The issue would have died right there. Because he talked a good game, but he didn't have the nerve. And the fact that we have the nerve that day brings us even here. And I don't know about those things, but I know the things that we do to change things are sometimes very small things that we say or do that has impact on a lot of people. And I don't know how that's made, how you do it, but that's, you know what that first step is. And I don't even know what it is. But that's and I think Mark wanted to mention this. Somebody in this community made me very proud. Because they've taken that first step. I think on Tuesday we're going to see a number of high school kids here. I know that Winnebago High School is going to come up here now. Because the rest of this generation, we don't have no nerve. These high school kids see the same thing that we're looking at, that we have seen. They see it, and they become alarmed, and now they're working to change things. They were only 6 years old when Hard Heart and Black Elk were murdered. Now they're grown up, and maybe they can do something, you know, that we can't do. And Mark, go ahead.
Frank is talking about an initiative led by some high school students at Creighton Prep. In fact, one of the students is here today, Cameron Pop. I'd like him to come down, actually, and explain what they have done. They talked with Frank. They saw the film, and and they've taken a huge initiative, which is the most positive thing going on right now, I think.
We started out in January after having Frank come talk to our social justice class called Awareness, taught by this gray-haired guy right here. We were so angered by it that we started a core group of guys from that class. And we started out, I remember the first meeting, it was very just all over the place because it was like, what do we do? And I'll start from the top. We first made a short movie about the issue and highlighted the main points, took some footage from the film that you just saw. It's on YouTube. We played it for a number of people, one of whom was I want to say 2 weeks ago, we presented to Project Extra Mile, which is I don't really know what they do.
They're a coalition of community groups fighting underage drinking across Nebraska.
There you go. And there's different chapters. There's one in Wahoo, one in Fremont, one in Omaha. And we presented it to them. It was well received. We've also had a prayer service. It was kind of a prayer service where we had Jesuits from Prep come talk about their experiences teaching at Red Cloud Indian School, which is a Jesuit high school on the reservation, and that went well. We were written up in the paper for that. We've been written up, I want to say, two other times, directly or indirectly. I think once was just in the Go section. It was a short article about that meeting with John Bruning that Mark mentioned. And I think the other one was just when they actually went to White Clay, which that was
two. Why don't you tell us about your petition drive?
We've got, yeah, that's next on the list. Yeah. We've got sort of, we call it a resolution, but it's a petition that we're handing out. So far, we haven't really tallied it up yet. We have no idea how many petitions we have yet. But we've got a petition going for President Obama, because members of his administration know about White Clay. And actually, if we can get a hold of him and tell him about this, all he has to do is sign an executive order that rules back. Have you talked about the executive order?
No. We didn't talk about it here.
I'll brief it
real
quick.
In the film, yeah.
In the film it was?
Well, it's in the film, yeah. The executive, what Cam is referring to is the fact that White Clay lies on a 50-square-mile parcel of land in Nebraska that was given to the Oglala Sioux tribe in the 1880s. And when the original boundaries of Pine Ridge Reservation were set up in 1889, included the land in Nebraska, which includes White Clay. In 1904, under pressure from white business people in Sheridan County, President Teddy Roosevelt took that land away from the reservation by executive order. The tribe has talked for years about lawsuits on this, because you get back to the idea that an executive decree cannot undo an act of Congress, which was how this land became part of Pine Ridge Reservation. But lawsuits have been talked about for some years and never happened. The idea out there is that if the current sitting president signs a decree undoing President Roosevelt's decree taking White Clay and that area back into Nebraska, that land could be given back to the Pine Ridge Reservation, and it wouldn't change ownership of the land in any way, shape, or form, but it would change the jurisdiction. And because the sale of alcohol is illegal on the reservation, that would bring that issue to the forefront. And obviously, the reservation could choose to legalize it, but if they chose not to, as they have chosen in recent years when this issue is coming up, that those liquor stores would have to close. So the idea is to get President Obama to do that. A former senator, Jim Aberesk from South Dakota, attempted to contact President Clinton in the last months of his administration with that request, and he failed to reach him. He attempted to contact George W. Bush in the first months of his administration and was rejected by letters from Cheney and others in his administration. The idea is to bring this to President Obama. So, and these guys are leading an effort on this.
So that's the petition for Obama. We have the separate one that's the print one that we wrote for the Catholic senators. We're in the workings of presenting to the Catholic high schools and then eventually the public schools in the metro. And for each one of those, we actually have it's kind of like a poster petition where our sort of mission statement's at the top, and then whoever signs the poster agrees to that. We have one of them. It's still at Prep. It's in his office, actually. And we have one of those. But we're still working on presenting to the other Catholic high schools. We also have a Facebook group, and I checked before I came, and there's 1,325 people so far, and I message them almost on a weekly basis, and I think some people are starting to get bugged by it because I update them with what we're doing, and I had one guy send me back, stop messaging me. He doesn't like it apparently, but I told him about this, and we've got statistics on there. Every article that's been in the World Herald since we started is referenced there. We have an electronic version of our petition on there, and I think about 119 maybe people have signed that so far. They signed it electronically.
Yeah, we need some more questions. Sorry. Thanks, Cameron. Yeah.
Yes, my name is Mike Carroll. I want to thank you for your work on the film and work on the issue. As I look at Native American circumstances in this country over the last several decades, you know, it's largely a question of self-determination. In what you were just talking about in terms of President Obama's executive order on jurisdiction, that would take care of the issue. But you also mentioned that the Lakota Nation could decide to legalize alcohol sales. If the Lakota Nation legalized alcohol sales on the reservation, then there'd be no reason for Native folks to walk to White Clay. Is there any support on the Pine Ridge for such a change?
I don't think there's support there for that change. A number of years ago, Russell Means and myself even proposed, you know, perhaps they need to legalize it. It was a means of control, of trying to control it, to keep people from going back and forth, keep people from being hurt. And be assured of the fact that that was not well received. And it didn't have anything to do with Russell. It didn't have anything to do with Frank. The vast majority of the people on Pine Ridge want to keep alcohol off of their reservation. Historically, they know what it has done. And so, you know, we would have worked toward that end if there was consensus, but there wasn't any consensus at all. And I guess I just defer, of course, to the Oglala people. The only one who thought that that was a wonderful idea at that time was Rush Limbaugh, who talked about it on his program, What Great Americans We Were, because this is free enterprise, and it just didn't do anything for the, you know, the discussion about it. It just would perpetuate and would take away from what the issue was, and the issue was violence and illegal activities that take place. But that's a good point. One of these days, sometimes I think it would be, I think it personally, it may be to their advantage. I'm sure there's pros and cons, but they would better control it. But I can't. They're, as somebody said, they're a sovereign people. They will make that decision, and historically, I can see why they have made that decision. But people have to support it, compliment it, and we as Nebraskans can really compliment that effort. They want to get well. They want to bring their families back together. And there's something that stands in the way. We may be a part of it. I won't even say a big part, but we're a part of it. And I always, when we're in Omaha, you know, you've seen how much $600,000 a year generated in taxes at White Clay. Take that times the time we've been dealing with it. You know, that's $6 million. And just take it over many, many years. And those dollars have to go somewhere. I think they go to build beautiful parks along the riverfront. They build beautiful parks, different parts of the state, but we don't have any dollars. Our budget isn't. Our budget cannot take care of the treatment things that we can do there. We talk a good game even on treatment. You know what they need is treatment. We don't expend any dollars on treatment. We just talk about it in Nebraska. But that's changing. That is changing. That's changing because we as Nebraskans, I think, are pretty fair people. Sometimes it takes us a while to understand things, but we generally will do the right thing. And I'm waiting for those Nebraskans to step up, and they're there, and there are a lot of them there. I will. Mark never mentions this. You know, since this started, people have exercised constitutional rights, and people have voiced opinions. People have gathered, and there have been 27 arrests I think all of them undue arrests since this effort began. 14 of them are of Native Americans. 13 of them are of white Nebraskans. That's a little known fact. And so it's not just this, oh, that guy. It's not just Frank. It's a lot of people, a lot of good Nebraskans. And I think we'll ultimately deal with the issue. And you know, we're going to win. You know, you win when you don't go away. And I think that's where we're going to, you know, be with it.
I want to add a couple of historical notes to your question, Mr. Carroll. It is true that there are factions all the time on Pine Ridge that believe that that alcohol should be legalized for a variety of reasons, and many of them are sensible reasons, revenue, and maybe they can control the problems in White Clay, maybe not. But the last time, and they have a casino on Pine Ridge that is alcohol-free, and so the idea that they might have alcohol there might attract more business. There's all sorts of reasons. I believe it was in 2004 or 2005, but the last time this got some traction in tribal council, there was a proposal to have a referendum with the people on the reservation about whether they wanted to legalize it or not. And there was quite an uproar and an outcry from Chief Red Cloud and a lot of the elders. They asked the tribal council to hold hearings around at the districts around the reservation before they put this to a referendum vote. Again, keep in mind that everyone's aware that perhaps as many as 4 out of 5 adults on Pine Ridge have alcohol abuse problems. Everywhere they held these hearings in all the councilors' districts, people came out by the scores and hundreds to say, we do not want to legalize alcohol. We don't want you to put this referendum forward. We have to keep this struggle going. We have to find ways to build treatment centers and deal with this, but we don't want to legalize it. And so the tribal council voted that down as a result of hearing from people around the reservation. The other historical note is for a very brief period of time, I don't know exactly how long, I think it was a matter of weeks, in the early 1970s, the tribe did legalize the sale of alcohol, had a tribal store in Pine Ridge Village, and it proved to be such a disaster that they closed it in very short order. That was at a time when I'm assured by everybody on the reservation that the statistical incidence of alcohol abuse and alcoholism was much lower than it is now. So the elders that are aware of that situation are maintained their concern about doing such a thing. But it is brought up by different factions all the time.
You've been listening to a panel discussion on Noon Forum, which followed a screening of the 2008 documentary film The Battle for White Clay, directed by Lincoln, Nebraska filmmaker Mark Vezina. The event took place at Filmstreams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Saturday afternoon, March 28, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel were Mark Vezina, the director of the film, and Frank Lemaire, the protagonist in the documentary. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Laura Shainrock, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of Filmstreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.